Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start just a little bit late. This is the Subcommittee of Transportation and Economic Development for the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Susie Jordan is here from Legislative Fiscal Office, and Susie Worth is our Subcommittee Assistant. And this is a subcommittee of the subcommittee while we get rolling. And so we will begin this morning by taking public testimony and a public hearing on 8/21. Senate Bill 8/21 relates to Crater Lake National Park commemorative registration plate, and I'm not certain whether anyone has signed up to give any testimony on that particular. ODOT, Kelly Taylor. So let's see, would you like, oh, let's see, Senator, you're here on the speed deck.
Wait, okay. Learn something about Crater Lake.
Okay, speeding past Crater Lake, we have, let's go ahead and start in with 8/21, public testimony on Senate Bill 8/21. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Taylor, Department of Transportation. I don't have any formal testimony prepared. I just wanted to just talk to the bill a little bit and let you know something about the -A4 amendment. Certainly, if you choose to do another plate, we can design that, but this is something, of course, that the AG, Attorney General, has said that we cannot use highway funds for, so we either need other funds or general funds or something in order to put a fundraising plate together, something that raises money for something other than the highway fund. And the -A4 amendments are changing the bill from in Section 4 from it being general fund money to being the transportation operating fund taxes, et cetera, described that go into that. We don't know yet how much will be in that fund, and that fund was created to address some of the AG's Attorney General's letter of guidance on some parts of the department that cannot operate off a highway fund. And we will be doing a survey to find out how much money will be going in there, et cetera. I'm just letting you know if there's not enough money in that fund to pay for everything, we'll come back and let you know. And we would not be able to start on this plate or even the Cultural Trust Fund plate that was passed the other day. We need to make sure we've got enough money to cover them. That's all I'm saying. Not that we won't do them. It just would be a delay on startup until we have the funds necessary to do so.
Okay, Representative Johnson is recognized.
I'm very sympathetic, thank you, Mr. Chair, to the idea that we can help certain either fish or scenic places through special license plates, but I have a couple of questions. If the money comes out of the Transportation Operating Fund, I believe that we heard testimony in this committee that some of that money is being held aside to promote organ donation.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, the organ donor program, that piece of the driver's license program, yes, needs to be paid out of this particular fund.
So I guess as a committee member, the dilemma that I have is balancing the public good of promoting and advocating for organ donation where people's lives are saved and a commemorative license plate that, while it does good things for Crater Lake, is competing for those funds. You have no idea at this point how much money is going to be in that fund in toto, do you?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, that was the point I was trying to make in my bumbling around. We don't know how much money will be in there yet.
How will you prioritize?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I'm not sure. Let me see if someone does.
Let's have our legislative fiscal address it, because this is intended to be a temporary loan, is my understanding, until we can bring that fund around. Susie Jordan from Representative Legislative Fiscal.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendment is intended to be a loan. It was from the transportation operating account. It does specify that those monies be repaid to the account once the plate starts generating some revenue. The agency has estimated that at the low end they would be receiving over a net $382,000 to a high of $1.2 million, and they won't know what the revenue actually will be until they do the survey, which could take a couple of months. We'll delay implementing the plate, but it's also assumed that they would, the priority would be that they're operating, their business operations would be the first priority, and this would be at the bottom of that.
Does that address your primary concerns? We'll come back to Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I just want to add one thing. I was reminded that the bill that creates the Transportation Operating Funds talks about what things shall be paid out of that, and this says if we determine there's sufficient money, then it will come otherwise. So that it kind of helps set the priorities.
Thank you very much for making that clear. I've been a great proponent of advocating the life-saving opportunities afforded by organ donation, and you've satisfied my question that we're not going to sacrifice that program for commemorative.
You each have the dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 821 in front of you, and the A4, as my understanding, accomplishes exactly what you have just addressed and were questioning, Representative Johnson, and to which Kelly and Susie have responded. Are there other questions relative to the A4 amendments? Representative Ringo is recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just on the concept in general, what's the capacity for such plates for all different types of projects? Is there a certain point where the public just doesn't want specialty plates, and this one is going to be competing with the Cultural Trust, and I understand there's one for some kind of horse?
Mr. Chair and Representative Ringo, there are currently 25 different fundraising plates, and quite frankly, most of them, except for the salmon plate, most of them aren't doing well at all. Some have sold very, very little. Even the University of Oregon and the OSU plates that, you know, they thought, boy, if we got the law changed and we could have our logo or our mascot on there, you know, our alumni are so fiercely loyal that, you know, we'll be able to do scholarships and things out of this, and that just hasn't been the case at all. The beavers have sold more than the ducks, but not by much. And but truly, what we see is that Oregonians, every state's different, but in Oregon, what we've seen with specialty plates, given that there are a couple of million passenger plates out there, potential, the tiny amount that is sold tells me that most Oregonians don't want to pay more for their registration, hence ballot measure A2 out there. I mean, Oregonians are, they like the fact that registration is low, and when they realize, gee, I have to pay $20 or $30 more for this particular cause, we see maybe some people sign up the first time, but by the time they go for renewal, they drop off, the interest has waned. When the salmon plate began, the Oregon Trail plate decreased by 35% from the previous year.
That's an excellent question and response. I want the record to reflect that when President Ringo talked about some kind of horse plate, I want that to be the emphasis to be on some kind of horse. That's the Tiger Gorge.
The Tiger Gorge horse.
Yeah. Follow up, Representative Ringo.
What reason do we know that this plate's going to make money and it makes sense to be this plate?
Mr. Chair and Representative Ringo, there is no reasoning. There's just heartfelt emotion in some folks that they really like this idea. And so what we find with each group, as they've come up, ducks, beavers, and everyone, each group is hopeful that theirs will be the one that sells. And really, time is all that will tell. Again, when the salmon started, trail decreased by 35%. And I don't know whether salmon will now decrease. I don't know whether Cultural Trust Fund will be more popular than this. I believe from what we've seen, what we've heard from our customers through the years, there is a finite number of people out there that are willing to pay more.
Just one more.
Follow up.
Does anybody ever do any marketing studies first to know if one of these plates will fly or not?
Mr. Chair and Representative Zingle, I don't know. We have not done that.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
I would defer to our colleague from the Senate if he has.
Okay, he's going to tell us about some kind of license plate there, some kind of horse plate.
There's some kind of horse plate out there, too.
The tiger horse plate? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. For the record, my name is Jason Atkinson, State Senator, District 25. This, I'm not sure what has been said. I just ran down here because I saw this was up, and I forgot all of my other plates. This is the Clear Lake license plate. This idea actually came to me it actually was brought to me by a friend of mine who's in Klamath County. And what this plate hopes to do is, of course, commemorate the anniversary of the park. This is not a unique idea, though. There was another national park in another state, I believe in Colorado, I think. Anyway, that did something similar, and the support was overwhelming. In the national park system, our particular Crater Lake National Park is one of the jewels of the national park system. And what we figured out was, given the low amount of funding that was received for the education, kid groups and whatnot, to go to the Crater Lake National Park is low from a federal level. However, Crater Lake National Park has significant economic impact on the five counties that touch Crater Lake National Park. We thought we would go this route and see if we couldn't commemorate, have a plate, and then I think there was a marketing question whether or not the plate would sell. I'll explain that in just a second. I think one of the things that you see before us, unlike the other ideas that are out there in this particular measure, is we've tried to figure out a way, how do you take the fiscal out? And one of the ways, as you know, this isn't really, the impact on the state is, I mean, it's usually around about $180,000, am I right? Give or take. Let's just say that. $180,000 is a block, and then it goes back to, once the plates are sold, it goes back and sell, which you're all aware of. Well, that really wasn't good enough and creative enough. So what we figured out, as you'll see in this particular measure, is of what if some of the very interested groups like counties, county economic development, or county groups, maybe even more than one county, has got together to loan the state the money for the upfront costs, sales of plate, pay back the county, and then the surplus of that goes to what the plate is designed to do, which is to go in the National Park Endowment Fund to help that particular educational side of the park. Could we do that? Well, Kelly has been very supportive, and we have, I don't believe this has ever been done before, so we crafted a very creative amendment, as you'll see in this bill, to do that. Essentially, our effort, and I think we've done it pretty good, is to take most of the fiscal out from the state's liability standpoint and put it on the very interested parties in Southern Oregon that are interested in getting this thing going. Secondly, is there a demand for this particular plate? Here in the Capitol building, we talk about K-12 funding. We talk about the transportation package. We talk about some of the very large issues. When I go home, nobody wants to talk about that. People want to talk about, where's that Crater Lake National Park plate? Believe it or not, I was stopped at home on the street. Somebody yelled at me and made me stop at Main Street to ask me what was the status of this bill. Therefore, I bring it to you today, Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson, has there been any anticipation of any kind of federal funds where this is Oregon's only national park?
We have been working with the head park ranger, who at the time we began down this road, we were at the beginning of a new administration, so he was unable to commit to that. Optimistically, yeah, we would like, if we can get this thing passed, what we will do is we'll go back to the local, essentially economic development, local counties or whatever, and try to bundle up funds to get the upfront cost taken care of.
How will that proceed to seek a reimbursement for the plate from the national, if we could proceed down that road?
Well, what we would do is it would be part of the responsibility of the collection at the local level, and then we probably collect it at probably in a county fund or a regional fund, and then make the payment to the state.
Okay.
I wanted to take the the onus of the state out of it, if I could.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I don't know whether my question was first triggered by looking at the trooper in the back of the room or seeing the rendering of your design. I'm interested in design and the function of a plate. I recall we had some problems with designing the tree plate, and it had to be redone. That's a very complex design. And my curiosity is, how will the design be picked, and will OSP be included? Because I think probably there's a law enforcement component to being able to use the plate for what it was really intended for, which is vehicular identification.
I will share my comments with Kelly. When we began, do we have this amended? I mean, we're going to go through your process.
I was just looking at it. It's still not that we're dividing, so I'm okay, but it doesn't have to.
I see from the bill that the parks are folks will be included in the design.
Yes.
But my curiosity is there a role for law enforcement to be included in the design so that what the license plates intended to be used for will be consistent with what police require?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, Senator Axelrod and I were just looking at some of them. Typically, in any special or any plate bill, there's language on the engrossed. I'm looking at page 2, lines 7 through 10. This is real standard language where it says we'll design the plate in consultation with usually whatever group it is that wants it. We always include law enforcement. And you're right, this is a beautiful picture. And you know, with a computer, you can do a lot of interesting things with colors. With our plate design, it is first its function, which is to identify a plate. Law enforcement is always concerned that when they pull a car over and they call into dispatch before they get out of their car, they're able to read that plate and tell dispatch who they got. It helps them know for the officer's safety should they get out of the car or not, or call for backup, or you know, whatever. And also at crime scenes, drive-by shootings, things like that, witnesses often provide valuable information for law enforcement with the plate. A, being able to tell it's from Oregon, and B, what the heck the numbers and letters were on it. So we are concerned about function. And then we also try to balance aesthetics. Function comes first, and then aesthetics. Within the manufacturing process of creating a plate, the sheeting, the reflectorized sheeting, you are limited to 4 colors. And that's because each layer has a color in it, and after 4, it begins to crack and not hold up. So with the 3M reflectorized sheeting, we'll be limited to 4 colors. So let's say the group submits this to us. What we'll do is we would work with them to try to say, okay, this is what you're trying to get at. We may do something like put Oregon at the top and the Centennial Lake at the bottom. We probably can't get, I'm sure we can't get all of those particular hues of the mountains and stuff, but we would do our best to come up with as close a depiction as we could that satisfies the aesthetics, but function always comes first. It's always a balance.
Okay, so just to repeat back what you just said to me, law enforcement will be included to make sure that it does what it's supposed to do, and I see the trooper nodding up at that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, we would insist that they be part of the process.
And secondly, for a design as complex, beautiful, but as complex as that one, what happens if you're not able through this 4 layering method to achieve a design that's that attractive? Is there a fallback position, or have you tried this as a prototype yet to see if you can achieve that very attractive look?
Mr. Chair and Reverend Johnson, no, we haven't. I mean, this is the first time I've seen it. It's beautiful. Like I said, the lake is a beautiful lake. Whether or not we can capture its blue, I don't know. I don't think we'll be able to do all of it on that, but we could try. But again, it's going to be limited to 4 colors, and if you've got different hues of brown, you get a brown for like the mountains.
How much expense is there in fussing around with trying to see how it will look?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I'm not sure of the cost. It's more time consuming. That typically is one of the biggest pieces of a plate startup is coming up with some mock-ups and working back and forth on paper first, and then eventually having the plate company run maybe your two top ones. And then we actually, like with Sam and a few others, put them on a car out on a parking lot and walk away a certain distance, because what you see up close is one thing. What you see far away is another. Sometimes it gets better far away for visibility. Sometimes it doesn't. We will do a mock-up and work back and forth with the National Park Service, and then 3M and us and law enforcement, And, you know, like I said, we may have Oregon at the bottom, at the top. We may have Oregon in a different blue. I mean, you'll play with it, trying to do the best you can.
Right.
Like, he's got different mock-ups.
Just like Price is Right.
Only, yeah. It may end up being...
Oh, damn it.
I love it. Carol Merrill behind the big curtain, you know, from the Let's Make a Deal days. It may be something more of a simple design like this versus a real detail, because you really can't get a whole bunch of detail in the sheeting. You can do your best. And you're limited to four colors.
And the price is still a modest $180,000.
Yeah.
I would add, I just sent somebody, actually staffed it, up to my office. I have these, the actual plates sent to me, and they're remarkable. I'll send these around in case they don't show up.
Representative Smith, you had a question.
No, more of a comment. I'd normally be reluctant for a bill such as this when I see such a fine chief sponsor and co-sponsors as our good senators. I'm more than pleased to advance this forward.
If I can make one comment, thank you very much. We've had, I've got one bill left in the pipe, and this one has been the most fun that we've had the whole session.
You think about an Elvis bill or anything?
No Elvis bill.
I didn't have somebody ask me about one.
It's just, the thing about the bill is that I'm actually really impressed with how many people, and I'll say in about four counties, have called or written or emailed and said, I want these plates. And has there been a market study done? I didn't commission one, do a poll or anything, but I will tell you that people have been more interested in talking, and I do a lot of constituent work. They're more interested in this than K through 12. And it's, you know, it's just, to me, that's mind-boggling at this point. But
and you can't dip into the 5.2 billion.
No. But anyway, I wish I wouldn't have run down here. Some of these things are just breathtaking. But to answer your question, the design, I'm very flexible.
Other questions, Senator or Representative Johnson?
Okay. I'm just curious, Charlie, where are our plates made?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, they're made by a company called Irwin Hodson in Portland.
Not stamped out in the prisons anymore.
Okay. Never have been, Mr. Chair, in Oregon.
Now, there's a good industry. We do have a good plate manufacturing office there.
Yes, they make plates for, Mr. Chair, they make plates for all over the country, all over the world, and it's a small local business, and they do a very good job.
Excellent. Further questions? Senator Yee is recognized.
So the end result of this promotion of plates is that National Park Foundation will get $157,000.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, it really depends on the plate sales as to how much. We tried to estimate based on salmon. If they sold as well as salmon, you know, what would it look like? And that's what it is. Time will tell, Senator. We really don't know.
So, follow-up, Bill. This is based on how many plates will be sold if you use salmon as a estimate.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yeah, exactly.
How many?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, I'm going to look real quick. Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, if we started by July of 2002, next summer, issuing these, it does take quite a while to start it up and get it going. From that through the next full biennium, it looks like you might sell around 25,000 plates or so. We really haven't sold that many salmon plates. Again, it's, you know, with the surcharge being $30 more, some people are just, you know, they like the idea. I think in some states where the registration fees are so high, for example, California and such, when you're paying several hundred dollars, you kind of feel like for another 20 or 30 bucks, heck, you owe it to yourself to pick a plate. I think in Oregon, when you pay only 30 bucks and then you're going twice as much, you know, you people hesitate.
Thank you. Another question.
Follow-up,
so how much are we selling this for?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, it looks like we're going to be charging a surcharge of $20 per set, according to the bill. $10 per plate. So if you had, these go on passenger cars, recreational vehicles, and campers. Campers only have one plate. So if you were buying it for your camper, it'd be $10. If you're buying it for your passenger car, it'd be $10 per plate, so it'd be a total of $20, Senator Yee.
And another question. So in 3 years, you're aiming at $25,000. Aiming at 25,000 like in 3 years, because she said second year of this biennium and the following biennium.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, I'm looking really quickly and I'm trying to add, and my math is not always that hot. It looks like in the first biennium, in the first year, we might sell around 16,000, 17,000, and in the next biennium, maybe about 22,000. So I guess that's about 30,000 altogether. Sorry, I was not adding very quickly or very correctly.
We do have a.
And that's strictly a guess based on salmon sales. There's really no idea. These may be more popular than salmon. I have no idea.
Senator, follow up.
Another question. I think Crater Lake National Park is a national jewel, and I strongly believe we need to promote it. But what would the money be used for? I guess this question is for Senator Atkinson.
Once it's back, once the obligations have been met, the additional money?
Yes.
Well, what we've done is we have, knowing that that is out in the future, we haven't really closely defined that, but working with the park, we have two elements to it. The first element to it is promoting the education side of the park, which is, most people don't realize this, but at this particular national park, there is tremendous outreach to kids and school groups, and one of the things that has happened nationally is we've seen that at least in recent decades, actually the last 20 decades, a lot of people have quit visiting national parks. And so one of the biggest fears is that we're actually will lose our, I don't want to say allegiance, but essentially lose our allegiance to national parks. For instance, Yellowstone, if you go to Yellowstone right now, you're going to be faced with bumper-to-bumper recreation vehicles, and the experience actually goes down. And so what they're seeing across the United States, Park Service is seeing across the board, is that park attendance is dropping down, and we're losing, you know, essentially a whole generation of people who have never had that experience. So the first part of it is the education side and promotion and education side to help fix that problem. Loosely in our conversations, and perhaps the most exciting part of it is how do you promote it or coordinate the park with the tourism departments of the surrounding counties, namely Deschutes, Lake, well, it could be Lake, but I meant to say Klamath, Lake, Deschutes, Jackson, Douglas, Josephine. Those are all the ways that you can actually get into the park, and there's a tremendous amount of people who come, for instance, to my district. They'll travel to see a Shakespearean play, they'll go to see an evening concert at Brett, and then you have to go to Crater Lake. I mean, it's a must-do. And if you go through Central Oregon, it's the same problem, it's the same issue. So the coordination of that. Earlier we were discussing, and apparently this did not get amended in, was the Dash 2s, which do the loan element that I said at the beginning of my testimony. And I'd be more than happy to distribute those, and you could admit them here if you'd like.
Okay. Further questions?
Thank you
very much, Senator. We're in a public hearing relative to this Senate Bill 821 for the Crater Lake National Vehicle Registration Plates. And we've had the questions responded to. That we do have the fiscal based upon the salmon plate that is before us, which does anticipate that all of the funds, advance funds, could be covered in the first biennium with transfers during the second biennium, based upon, again, that's based upon the actual sales of the salmon plate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any questions relative to that fiscal? indicating there is a potential that there would be amounts transferred to the National Park Foundation sometime during the old 305 biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Russ Ingram.
I just wanted to clarify, there's an additional amendment to this?
Yeah, we were just talking about that. We had this amendment before the last committee. Let me give this to you.
Is that not 04?
This is the dash 2.
Dash 2.
And we were just looking in the A engrossed, and it's not printed there. And this is, let me read it to you, the Department of Transportation may accept a loan from a public entity for the purpose of initiating the Great Lake National Park Registration Plate Program established in Section 1 of this 2001 Act, including but not limited to registration plate design, computer program, and registration plate production setup. That should have been in there, but apparently it's not in there. So let me, that and that, our whole pickup there, like I began at the beginning of my remarks, was to get over the fiscal.
Looking at it, but wait a minute, that's what I mean.
Okay. Yeah, we probably need to do that. Let's go ahead and give the co-chairs an opportunity to look at that and approve those, and we will go ahead. What we'll do now is I will first open a public open the work session on Senate Bill 821, and then I'm going to close the work session on 821 and carry it over until tomorrow, where we'll have the public hearing and the work session will be carried over to tomorrow at 10 o'clock to discuss the Senate Bill 821 with the dash 2 and the 4 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Kelly.
The part, Susie, that we crossed out of the top is the part we don't want in the dash. We don't want that part because
okay.
That changes the design,
and
we have talked
those,
about that already.
Dash 2 amendments because the dash 4 amendments, in my understanding, have been approved by the co-chair.
Okay.
At this particular point.
Yeah,
so
I just would say that pending. I remember I sat on the other committee that heard this testimony before, and I have the same thing highlighted that you do, and I thought they were adopted to the bill.
Yeah, I thought we adopted them, but
yeah.
It's not printed, so.
All right, with that, we will go ahead and carry that over until tomorrow at even hour.
Thanks,
so, thank you very much. We'll now open up a public hearing possible work session on Senate Bill 502. This relates to increasing the interstate highway speed. And let's see, Senator Miller was just outside the door. All right, thank you, Bob.
You and Representative Smith are going to have to take Representative Ringo and explain to him some kind of horse.
Some kind of horse.
Well, the Tiger Mustang?
That's some kind of horse.
Yeah. I knew it wasn't, you know, the quarter horse.
I mean, we want a quarter of the horse anyway.
I've had quarter horses all my life, and I've never heard that remark. We'd want a quarter of a horse. I don't know. The committee, this building seems to be deteriorating.
Yeah, it's going downhill fast. Well, why don't we go ahead in anticipation of Senator Miller's arrival, go ahead and take information on Senate Bill 502. Someone from the, let's see, let's go ahead with the governor's office.
We've got Senator Miller, the only one signed up for 502.
Go ahead.
I'd really like him to go first.
He's right outside.
Is he?
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll get him up the table here. There he is right there. Senator, welcome.
Here to talk about Crater Lake.
Please, go ahead, man.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and members of the subcommittee. I appreciate your having me come before you and entertaining this bill. For the record, State Senator Randy Miller, District 13. you are all, I think, familiar with this bill, and I'm sure it's here for its impact on our budget, primarily. This is a bill that both chambers in the last session endorsed with wide margins of approval. Essentially what it does is it allows speed limits to be raised, but, and this is the critical thing I hope that this committee understands, which apparently is somewhat difficult to disseminate among the media, is this doesn't raise a single speed limit by itself. The passing of this bill won't do that. It simply allows the Department of Transportation, after it has hearings with law enforcement personnel, with traffic safety engineers, with local communities where a highway might traverse through, and after they've all given their input, if the decision is that it is safe to increase a current number, then the Department of Transportation would have that authority, and under this bill, as it's presently written, would have the authority to raise a speed up to 75. I know that the governor has a preference for a maximum of 70, and that would be fine with the author of the bill as a compromise. What I would caution this committee about is that under no circumstance would I be agreeable to jettisoning the basic rule in exchange for maximum limits. It would be far superior to have this bill vetoed than to impose unduly low maximum limits on our citizens. You all are aware of the critical difference, and that is that at least under some amendments I read, the state is interested in no longer allowing reasonable behavior on our freeways, on our highways. And we will penalize people for going over some number that may or may not be reasonable given the circumstances. The reason that this bill also is in its current form is that I don't think that I'm in position to dictate the particular speed for those of you who may live east of the big city. And I think, you know, the Department of Transportation is absolutely equipped to understand what would be safe in those regions and what would not be. So, again, you hear some people complaining that this is going to raise speed limits. Again, it does not. It is only after arguments in front of the Department of Transportation that could happen. The other thing that's true about this bill is if after those arguments are made, the department decided to lower speeds, it could. And there are occasions when that has happened, and I applaud them. Those of you familiar with the Terwilliger curves, used to lose about a truck about every couple hours, it seemed like, in those curves, and it went down from, it went to 50 from 55. Good. So I'm not here just trying to create a freeway or a Indianapolis 500 motorway in every stretch of highway.
Those adjustments would come out in the public hearings, which are
absolutely, and they should.
Okay. Senator Tarnos recognizes.
Senator Miller, I heard this, your testimony in the other committee I sit on before this bill was passed down here for the fiscal aspect. Fiscal impact. Could you share with this committee a little bit more your feelings on the basic rule and make some comments to this committee, which you did in the other committee about that issue?
I'd be happy to. The basic rule simply stands for the proposition that if you're driving down the highway and you are perhaps going something in excess of the posted number, you can be cited at that point for a violation of the basic rule. It is a rebuttable presumption that you have violated the law. But rebuttable means that you would have an opportunity to go before a judge and say, Your Honor, it was a beautiful, clear day. There was nobody on this highway. It was a straight stretch, and going 7 miles per hour over the number seemed reasonable. His or her honor would have the opportunity under the basic rule to agree with you. They don't necessarily agree. They may have a different view of what those conditions were, and that's fine. But the proof problem, the burden of proof, is on the motorist to prove that their behavior was reasonable given those circumstances. And as a practical matter, for those who are worried about continuing the basic rule, if you happen to get, if you live in Portland, let's say, and happen to get cited by the Jefferson County Police, maybe another trip over to Central Oregon, although it is a very desirable place to be, is not necessarily something you can afford to do if you have other obligations back near your home. The maximum speed limit, the trouble I have with that is, it is quite likely that that number will probably ignore reality and reason, be artificially low for some certain circumstances. And the only proof issue in that point is, did you exceed the number? It doesn't matter whether your driving was reasonable. All that matters is, you know, were you going 67 in the 65? Were you going 57 in the 55?
County by county ordinance, is that what that is? Is that what I'm hearing, Senator? The violation of that in Jefferson County?
And well, it would depend on the highway and whose jurisdiction. If it's a state highway, then the state would have imposed that sign.
But the violation, or the basic rule is throughout the state, is it not? On all states
yes.
And highways.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think the amendments, so far as I know, want to impose a maximum speed in those situations, and I would very much disagree with that.
Representative Smith is recognized.
The dead sure. Respond to you.
Thank you. I'm not sure who's going to refer this question to. Who collects, where do the dollars go that are collected off of a fine if it's a city, county, or state officer? Do they each go into a different set of funds? City officer pulls you over, where do those go? County,
they go to different, they go to different, if you're cited within the city, then a portion of that you'll go to the magistrates, through the magistrate's office of the city. If you're cited by a state trooper, then a larger portion of that goes into a state fund, is my understanding.
Follow-up question.
Yes, follow-up. Okay.
One public perception out there is that officers, particularly in city and counties, and this is only a perception, issue tickets as a fundraising device. And I'm just curious if there's any... there's anything
we
to that.
Firemen balls in our side of the state.
We didn't hear any testimony about that.
I see.
Well.
And so I guess where I'm going with that is I wonder if there's a fiscal impact to the local government as a result of reducing their
chairman,
Representative,
again, this bill shouldn't impact the performance of our officers. As a matter of fact, maybe your argument is that if you set a maximum speed, since the proof problem is such a piece of cake, that their conviction rate would go up and you wouldn't have some judge that could exercise a reasonable opinion and dismiss a ticket. And maybe they see this as a treasure trove, but I hope not. I do know that, having talked with some officers and having someone in my family who's to serve in that capacity, if you are not issuing tickets, it is thought that you're not doing your job.
Senator Carno is recognized.
Yes, I just wondered, Senator Miller, have you seen the fiscal impact? And if you're not, I'd like
I had earlier. I don't know if you've got a fresh one, but it was strictly for the signage, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, place signs and curve warning. 210, you have that one?
I heard that number.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I'm not in...
little cities in eastern
all I would say is the new speeds would become effective upon posting. So in effect, you know, I mean, if we really were this concerned about the number, then the delay in posting the number would reduce the cost, I guess. But it's my understanding also, and maybe somebody from ODOT can inform you, that these signs are routinely replaced over time, I guess. They get rocks thrown at them or weathered or whatever happens. I don't know.
Yes, Representative Ringo is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This fiscal is clear to me because it assumes that we're replacing all the signs. It assumes that we will, in fact, increase the speed limit. And when you say that this bill does not increase the speed limit, it seems like if that were the case, then there shouldn't be any fiscal, then it, one of those is incorrect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Ringo. When this bill passed last session, we had some discussions with the Department of Transportation, and they had maps already drawn up that indicated that, particularly on I-5, the speeds were very likely to be posted at 70. There was a little stretch near the Idaho border that was 75.
For eight, on 84.
84 also is only 70. And I think that'll probably be what happens if this bill should pass, that there would be, I think it's unlikely to see 75 in the real near term. But again, if the governor says that he'll swat this down if we insert 75, fine. If 70 is the posted limit and we have reasonable, the basic rule, to me that's a reflection of reality on the highways. And the other, and it reminds me, if you indulge me, as to the reason I bring this before you, and those of you who commute from Portland to Salem realize that in our own statistics generate that to the 85th percentile, our drivers are averaging 71.5 between Portland and Salem. Now, one thing to say about that is that under current laws, most of our citizens we have deemed lawbreakers. I have a 15-year-old daughter. She's going to be going solo here before too long. And there are occasions when I get to watch her perform behind the wheel and terrorize me. And I will from time to time suggest to her that maybe she needs to ease off the throttle. And she could probably respond by saying, well, Dad, I remember riding with you to the Capitol. So what I'm saying is that you kind of breed this selective enforcement, selective compliance by the operator of a vehicle. Well, I'm going to obey this law. Well, what other laws are we going to decide that we will ignore enforcement, number one, and that our citizens will say, you know, take a pass on that one. We really don't mean it. And secondly, it's had no negative effect on safety. You know, everybody says, you know, remember we went through all that drill about 55 saves lives. Well, I was just horse bucky in the common parlance, because it didn't happen. What we've found is that actually as speeds have increased throughout this country, and Oregon is one of only two states west of the Mississippi that has not increased their speed limits since the federal government got out of our face. And I suggest to you that if safety was an issue and people were doing themselves in on the freeways, I guess those other states, one, wouldn't have raised theirs, and two, they would have lowered them after they did. But it hasn't had a negative impact.
I would thank you very much, Senator. Yeah. We would like to go ahead and hear the response from the governor's office. Steve, can you respond, please?
For the record, Steve Marks, governor's senior policy advisor. Our governor, doctor, has one overriding concern as you look at increasing speeds, and that is that this legislation shouldn't compromise the safety of Oregonians. He's not satisfied that increasing our speeds on our interstates to 75 would meet that test. He does agree, and I think Senator Miller raises a very important point here, that we are, by the nature of our speed laws and the common violation of them, sort of creating a situation where we put our citizens in the position of being lawbreakers, and that sends a wrong message about respect for the laws that we have. And because of the fact that they are driving in excess of the speeds, the governor believes that we can reach a compromise that protects the safety of our citizens. Any increase in speeds that would be allowed must be done through a thoughtful process by ODOT in consultation with the Oregon State Police and the Health Division. The governor would support on interstates maximums of 70 miles, almost got a compromise.
No. we're,
you're doing better, see?
70 miles an hour for cars. 60 miles an hour for trucks, and then under current law, they're allowed to increase on rural state highways as well. The other issue that he has is that we must have clear enforcement standards, and the legislation that the governor would support, and it's comprised in the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 205, would call that for the posted speeds being the maximum speed and allow enforcement. That would, and that goes, speaks directly to the VBR issue that Senator Miller was just describing. Lastly, the governor would want to make sure that we have adequate enforcement if we make this change and increase in our speed laws. And he would expect that this is necessary concurrent with enactment, that we increase a state highway patrol to reflect our priority on keeping our roads safe. So with that, I think there is one, as I understand it, and there's been some different versions of the legislation out there. Our Dash 1 amendments don't just apply to the interstates, but also apply to all state highways. We would put in place, currently, the posted speeds would become the maximum speeds as posted, and also in state law would then say the maximum speed for the interstate is 70. In the Dash 1 amendments, it leaves the rural maximum as an open question for ODOT. And I think there's a little bit difference in process under Senator Miller's bill, which does provide discretion to ODOT, but it does it in a reverse way, I think, from the process we would support. It raises the speed limits, and they go through the process of adjusting them downward. We would run that reverse and allow them to increase them from where they are. I think the net effect of that analysis is going to be the same and can be done fairly quickly, but we do prefer the process of allowing ODOT to, in consultation with state police and the health division, to move them up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marsh. We will, we're over by about 5 minutes, and I look around the table, and at the witness table, I'm holding up five people from being in full at this particular point. So in order to provide a quorum there, we need to go ahead and wrap this up. And Jim Bakunas is still on the agenda. And what I'd like to do is just go ahead and move Senate Bill 502 over for tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And if we can arrive here at 10 o'clock, we'll finish the public hearing on both of these bills which we're carrying over. And then we do have Representative Ringo's 375, which needs to be properly heard. So with that, we'll go ahead and get the list meeting over to tomorrow. Thank you very much.